Welcome to the Forum. Tonight's program features Robert Baker on financial literacy. This program was recorded at the Unitarian Fellowship of Lawrence, Kansas on November 16th, 2014.
Okay, our speaker today is Robert Baker. He's been a certified housing counselor for 15 years, and currently he is the resource director for Tenants to Homeowners. So help me welcome him.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me today. I'm really thrilled to be here. I currently work for an affordable housing program. Can you hear me okay without a microphone?
No,
that's okay. I currently work for an affordable housing. How about now? Okay? Currently work for an affordable housing program that has been in existence since 1992. The way we came in existence was because of an affordable housing need. How many of you were adults in the 1980s? Okay, do you remember what prime interest rates were then? Yeah, they were double digit. They were somewhere between 14 and 17%. As a result, we had quite a dip in home ownership. So in the 1990s, the government started trying to give cities money for down payment assistance for low to median income families. That means families earning less than 80% of what the average income was in a community. And the city wanted to get some of that money because they wanted to encourage home buying. But the money was funneled through cities to what they called community housing development organizations. So you had to have a housing nonprofit that specialized in just developing or rehabbing housing and giving down payment assistance for people to move in. It was similar to the GI Plan after World War II. And so in 1992, a group of volunteers got together, a realtor, a banker, a home remodeler, and they asked the city if they could apply for community housing development organization status. And they achieved that, and one home at a time, they would buy an old home and fix it up and then give people down payment assistance. This home on the screen is one of the first homes they fixed up. It's on New York Street, and they actually bought it, I think it was on the 1000 block of Mississippi or 900 block of Mississippi, and moved it because it was going to go under the wrecking ball to New York Street, put it on a foundation, fixed it up. And believe it or not, this home sold for, I believe, $50,000 back in 1992. The way the program was set up was if you were below 80% of median income and you could qualify for a bank loan, and there were a number of banks that participated, you could get up to 20% of the purchase price of the house as down payment assistance. And then for each year you lived in the house for up to 7 years, you would have a portion of that down payment assistance forgiven. So after 7 years, 50% of that would be forgiven. So at $50,000, this house got $12,250 worth of down payment assistance, and after 6 years, you owed a little bit over $6,000. And the idea was you would build up equity in the house so that when you resold it, you could pay back the $6,000 down payment assistance so it could be used for someone else. And that worked pretty well in the early 90s. But again, those of you who are adults anywhere from about 1995 to about 2007, you know what happened with the housing market here. Housing prices started to go up 5 to 7, sometimes as much as 10% a year. These houses were sold on the private market. So when you sold it, you could sell it to anybody else you wanted. They didn't have to be low to median income, they could be any income, and you could sell it for any price you wanted to sell it for. So what was happening with Tenants to Homeowners, we did 278 houses from 1992 through 2004. But from about 95 on, people who were in their house for, I'd say from 95 on for 5 to 7 years, could sell their house at a 30, 40, 50% profit. So what was happening was the amount of down payment assistance that was repaid did not make up for the spike in housing prices. So now you would have had to give 30 or 40 or 50% down payment assistance, which meant the program could not be sustainable. So in 2005, we did something that is still unique to the state of Kansas. We became the only land trust or housing trust program in the state. We changed our model. And so we are still called Tenants to Homeowners, but our home buying program is called the Lawrence Community Housing Trust Program. And how that works is instead of giving people down payment assistance and then letting them sell it on the private market when they're ready to sell, land trusts or housing trust programs are shared equity programs. So we put the down payment assistance into a lot. We buy the lot on which the house resides, which means depending on what neighborhood you're in, it could be anywhere from $30,000 to about $50,000 or $60,000 worth of housing assistance. The home buyer does not pay for the cost of the lot. They only pay for the cost of the home. And then when we remodel it, or if we develop new houses, which is what we most often do now, we make them energy efficient. We put about $10,000 of energy upgrades into the house. And believe it or not, even though we're a humble nonprofit, we were the first certified Energy Star builder in Lawrence. And a lot of high dollar builders started visiting our houses to figure out how it could be done. So between the energy upgrades and the cost of the lot, a buyer is getting about a $40,000 to $50,000 average discount on the cost of their home. Now, and what do they do in return for that? They do not own the lot. We do. They sign a 99-year ground lease with us, which stipulates that they can do anything on that lot they want. If they want to build a fence, they can build a fence. If they want to put in a sandbox, that's fine. If they want to paint their house pink, that's great, except good luck reselling it. But in return, they promise two things. One, that it will always be used for owner occupancy. They can't flip it and make it a rental. And two, because it's a shared equity program, they have to resell the house through the trust. So because they resell the house through the trust, they are going to agree to have a limited equity formula at resale, which is they get every dollar they paid into the house. We do a private market appraisal, and whatever the house is appraised at, we will list that house for example, we just sold a house on Alabama Street. When it was built, it sold for $125,000. Four-bedroom house, daylight basement, fenced in yard with a patio. That was in 2006. It just resold this year, and the market appraisal price, private market appraisal price, was $185,000. So they were able to get 25% of the hike in price. So it was a $60,000 hike in price. They were able to add $15,000 to the price, their original sale price, and that's what we sold the home for. So it sold for about $140,000. I ask you, where can you get a four-bedroom house that's less than 10 years old, that's ENERGY STAR efficient, which means your average utilities month in and month out, winter and summer, are going to be about $100 to $150 less than they would be if you didn't have ENERGY STAR efficiency? Where can you get that with a full basement for $140,000? So what happened was, once the word got out about that house, we had three buyers that were interested in that house. And so we sold it to the first qualified buyer. It was a family with two young children. They were happy to get that. So we right now have 72 homes that we have sold and are in trust. And that's the arrangement that the homeowner makes with us. Now, in return, because it's a shared equity deal, they have access to maintenance classes that we teach. They also have access to our tool lending library, which means they can borrow any tool that we have for construction or housing or remodeling if they want to do some on their own. The other thing we do, which is unique to our program, is we have two lenders now that agree. You know, lenders don't usually like to make loans on houses unless they get the whole package, including the land. But we've managed to find two lenders in town that feel like this is a good use of land because we'll have this permanently affordable housing that will keep circulating among people who need it. People who are under 80% of median income. And so the two lenders that agreed to do that were Truity Credit Union, you speak KU Credit Union, and Capital Federal. In exchange for agreeing to work with our program, we have talked them into doing something that you don't usually imagine lenders would do. They do not charge a prospective home buyer a home loan application, which these days can be as much as $300 to $500. So that fee is waived. What we do for the home buyer when they move in, we pay their closing costs. And we put $300 in an escrow account for them for home maintenance. Now we do that with the proviso that they will make that account their own. So they give us a checking account that they've established with their bank or a savings account. They give us the numbers and we can automatically deposit that in their account. And then they, every month, sign an agreement to put $25 into their home maintenance account. And anytime something goes wrong and they need to work on their house or they want to upgrade their house, they can have access to that account. So it's a forced savings plan, but as you know, things come up when you own a home, when you least expect it. And the experts will tell you that the average cost of home repairs that should be set aside is about 1% of your purchase price, which right now the average home in Lawrence sells for over $170,000. So that means you should have $1,700 set aside. So at this point, starting with $325 a month, it's going to take several years to build that up, but still somebody has a head start. And it works really well. We had one homeowner that after a storm, one of their neighbor's limbs fell on their roof, knocked off a few of their shingles, and dented their eave and their drainage pipe. They had a $2,000 deductible on their homeowner's insurance. They called us up, and we have a rehab maintenance specialist that sometimes comes up and helps people with their houses. He's also the one that organizes the tool lending library and the maintenance classes. So he went out to look at their place, said that he knew a roofer that would fix their drainage and put tiles on for $700. And that way they wouldn't have to worry about paying a deductible. They had more than $700 in their home maintenance account. So that little accident didn't cost them anything out of pocket. Now, I guess what I'd like to talk about is that's where we were at in 2005. That's how the program works. But I want to talk about how, as time has gone by, not only have we responded to the changes in the market by being a housing trust, because that means that house is always going to be permanently affordable. Much more affordable than a comparable house on a traditional MLS market. But we've noticed some other trends that have happened as a result of the recession and the high cost of living here. I'm sure you're aware, if you read the Journal World, that Chad Lawhorn did a comparison of 59 cities in Kansas with populations of more than 5,000. And that of all 59 cities that he compared, we have the highest cost of living if you factor in our per capita income. We also had one of the lowest per capita incomes, which means what the average adult working individual earns, which right now in Lawrence is about $33,000, is per capita, not household. So the median income in Lawrence is right now is $66,000. So that means there's a gap between what people at the high income level earn and what a lot of people who are considered middle class earners are earning. And we've been seeing that in our home buying now. We just recently figured out what the average home buying family or household earned last year when they bought a home from us in 2013. And it was about 65% of median income. Now remember, our cap is 80%. It used to be way back in the early 90s, most people were between 70 and 80%. Now they're closer to 65%. One family I can recall that was at 60%, believe it or not, they both have full-time jobs, one with the city and one with the county, but because they have three children, they are considered earning 60% of average income for their family size. So we're seeing that people are struggling now to afford a house. The Lawrence Board of Realtors has been tracking the amount of homes that are sold to first-time buyers. Our program is usually a first-time buyer program, but that definition is broad. If you've been someone who hasn't owned a house for a while, you could be considered a first-time buyer again. Only 28% of sales last year were for first-time buyers citywide. Before the recession, it was 40%. So you can see how that recession in the economy is affecting families' ability to buy homes. So we've responded in a lot of different ways. One is we build different homes of different sizes. We have a starter home that's two-bedroom, fully accessible, one level, meets all the universal guidelines for doorways and for bathroom access and kitchen access. And a lot of families will start with that home. As they build up equity, they can either buy another home in trust if they're under 80% of median income, or they can buy on the open market. We've started to build townhomes. We have five townhomes on Delaware Street, on the same street where you have the co-housing group. They're towards, it's on the 1200 block of Delaware on the east side of the street. They're on the south end near 13th and Delaware. We're on the north end at 12th and Delaware. And those townhomes were selling for, when they first sold, about $85,000. A couple of them have resold now. And resale rates have been closer to $90,000. So we're trying to find different ways to get families into houses. The starter house we built last year, there was one level. The family who bought it, theoretically, is at the poverty level. They were earning 31% of median income and 30% is the poverty level. Yet they had full-time jobs. But because they had no debt, they had down payment saved, and they qualified for our program. I should talk to you about the down payment. The down payment is 5% of your income, your annual income. So if you're earning $31,000 a year, 5%, your down payment is a little over $1,100. There is nowhere in the traditional market you can get into a house for an $1,100 down payment. So think about it. You have to put a down payment down. But it's 5% of your income. Most people have income that 5% of it would be less than the traditional down payment now, which is anywhere from $3,500 if you have good credit rating to $5,000 or $10,000 if you don't. And then you don't pay closing costs. Where else can you get into a house for $1,100 or $1,200? That's the cost of first month's rent for an apartment and a deposit on the apartment. So the program works. We've had, I think now we're up to 12 resales in the program. We had 7 this year because we're getting to the point now where if families have been in homes for 5 to 7 years and they've built up equity, they may be, and they have a larger family, they may be graduating to another home.
We'll be right back after a few messages. Again, you're listening to Robert Baker. This program was recorded at the Unitarian Fellowship of Lawrence, Kansas on November 16th, 2014.
The other thing that we've done is we have invested in apartments because we were seeing a lot of folks that wanted to buy homes, but maybe they had permanent disabilities and they were on fixed incomes, or they were seniors on fixed incomes, and they just could not qualify for a bank loan on the basis of income to afford a housing payment. We have a big commitment to accessible housing. We work with Independence Inc. and that we usually have a board member from Independence Inc. who represents accessible housing. And most of our new housing is universally accessible, at least on the main level, if not the whole house. We purchased 20 apartments that were intended to be fully accessible apartments that were built in the 70s, and they had not been remodeled since then. So we applied for tax credits. We purchased those through the tax credit application we got, and we completely remodeled them indoor and out. That was 2.5 years ago. And for folks that have permanent physical disabilities and are usually on a fixed income or only working a part-time job, they can get into those for 30% of their verified income. If they have a lot of medical bills, there's a formula where you can count a percentage of your medical bills as a deduction against your monthly income, or yearly income, which then lowers the 30% of your monthly income payment for rent. So we have 20 of those. We have another two or three that are fully accessible. And then we have a number of houses or apartments that are for families that want to graduate to home ownership but can't quite afford the cost of it yet, or haven't built up any kind of credit history yet to qualify for a bank loan, because that's harder to do now since the crash in 2008 of the housing market. And then we also have a few apartments for folks that just will never earn enough money to buy a house but want a decent place to live. Our apartments all, even the ones that aren't tax credit apartments, rent for less than the fair market rents for apartment, which currently for a one bedroom, it's $620 is the fair market rent. For a two bedroom, it's $819. For a three bedroom, it's over $1,100. This is fair market rent on apartments now. This year, we secured tax credits for the next tax credit apartment project that's going to be at 9th and Delaware. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called 9 Dell. It's from the man who built, who redid the Polar and made that into tax credit units. And the reason why we did that is East Lawrence is now going to be part of the warehouse district. And we anticipate that with the 9th Street Corridor and everything that comes with art-based warehouse districts and big corridors for art, that the cost of real estate is going to go up there. So this developer, Tony Krishnick, will be managing the apartments, but we did it for two reasons. One, it's going to provide 34 tax credit units. People who are at 40, 50, or 60% of median income will pay no more than 30% of their monthly income for rent. That is what the government says is the cutoff point for being able to afford housing without being what they call housing income stressed. So if you have a house payment that's over 35% or 40% or 50%, that means when an emergency comes up or some other bill comes up, you have a hard time meeting your monthly housing costs and everything else that comes due. So if you can have a payment below 30% of your monthly income, it's supposed to ease stress of making that housing payment. Currently, the city does a consolidated plan for housing. And it talks about the state of rental housing. I already told you what the fair market rents are. The state, they say right now that there are 9,900 renter households that are paying more than 35% of their monthly income for rent. And that of that 9,900, 6,400 are paying more than 50% of their monthly income for rent. So that's part of the reason why we've made a commitment to rental housing as well. So without counting those 34 units, which will also provide us some administrative income for writing that tax credit grant, We right now currently have 54 rentals and 72 homes in trust, and they will always stay more permanently affordable than the traditional market. And we like to think that since we've sold 12 houses, we will be able to keep selling those houses, knowing that they're properly maintained, to another family that's starting out and is below income. There are other changes that we've seen, and we're trying to broaden our partnerships to respond to that. First of all, remember in the 90s, the government had lots of money for housing that they distributed to cities. The money went not only to first-time home buyer programs, but to certified housing authorities like our Lawrence Douglas County Housing Authority. So they could give out Section 8 vouchers to folks who were truly extremely low income and even had a hard time affording the lowest fair market rent in town. That is also, those funds have been cut, as have first-time home buyer cuts. The last 5 years, domestic funding, as you know, has been sequestered away. And right now, the amount of funds for affordable housing that is funneled through cities to housing agencies that have to report to the federal government and make sure that they're meeting guidelines, like our nonprofit and like the Housing Authority, those funds have been cut 66%. So by us getting administrative income and creating 34 tax credit properties in a place that's probably going to be gentrified, that's a good thing for us. But it points out a larger problem. We are seeing more and more people who want to rent from us that are in Willow. We have a partnership with Willow, and this year, two of their households have rented through us. We're seeing more people from the shelter who need homes. And part of the problem there is, if you go to a traditional landlord, they want to see references. They want to see that you have income to afford their rental. They won't accept sometimes someone providing down payment assistance. So that's becoming a real problem because the shelter, as you know, is already many nights over what they thought would be maximum numbers. So we have a tremendous problem with rentals in town for extremely low income and low income families. Another market that we're seeing that is going to be a tremendous problem is seniors. We are seeing now the growth of the senior citizen market. Right now it's about 40 million households nationwide. It is expected to grow to over 85 million households by the year 2030. So we are building a 14-unit senior village, I guess. I don't know if you've heard about it or read about it in the paper. It's called the Cedarwood Senior Cottages. And they are going to be 1 and 2 bedroom, single level, one level, fully accessible homes with a front and back porch. And the rear entrance will lead to a walking track. And in the middle of that path will be a community room, community center, that will have a warming, a kitchenette area with a warming oven in case you want to entertain folks outside of your 1 or 2 bedroom house. It will also have a health kiosk where you can take all your vital signs, and we're going to wire it so that when teleconferencing with a physician is an acceptable way to have an appointment, you'll be able to walk to the community center and do your medical visit there without having to worry about getting transportation or sitting in a doctor's office for a while. We're also outside the community center putting in about 20 raised bed gardens for anyone who wants to garden, and they'll be waist high so you don't have to bend over. And then around that walking track, we're going to personally plant 4 different types of gardens, including a water garden. We've already had contributions from the Lawrence Fruit Tree Project and other people for things to plant in those gardens. Those 14 units that we're building, we are building those because the Older Women's League came to us and said, you know, we've been professionals all our lives. Most of them have been in teaching or social work, and we are going to earn a modest pension. But even with our pension and our Social Security, we could not afford to move to a retirement center such as Brandon Woods. We don't really want to live in a high rise. We want to live someplace where it's affordable, but we have a sense of community and we feel part of a neighborhood. So we worked with them for 2 years on the designs, and now it's about to become a fruition. We finally have gotten enough grant funding in place that we will break ground next year in the spring of 2015 on these 14 units. Even though we haven't broken ground, we already have a list of interest of about 30 seniors. And we get calls from seniors all the time about either our tax credit properties, because they might have a minor physical disability or a major one, or about these Cedarwood Cedar cottages. And when the city and the county did, I don't know if you recall, they did a study about how to make this a attractive place for retirement. When you read that report, it's interesting because they surveyed KU graduates, alumni, who are coming of age to retire. And do you know two of the three reasons why they were concerned about retiring here? One was the cost of rental housing here, or retirement housing, and the variety of housing that was available. They were two of the three reasons why they weren't sure they should retire here. So we are hoping that this will be a demonstration project. This is intended for folks between about 50 and 80% of median income. And they will be rentals, mainly because 90% of the seniors that worked with us or that we surveyed do not want the responsibilities of home ownership, including property taxes and maintenance. And the more we thought about it, we thought, well, that might not be a bad idea, because if they were owner-occupied and the unit went to probate, that's one affordable housing unit that would be tied up for a long time. So we're hoping this will be a model that other people will emulate, so that there's some more modestly affordable retirement housing for folks who want to downsize. The other market that we see is for very young families. They are having a tough time. And so with the cut in funding at the federal level, we are trying to make partnerships with as many local groups and many other groups who think that this is a quality of life and social justice issue. What we always say is that affordable housing sustains community. We need a diversity of income and families and experiences in our community. And what we're seeing is the tax abatements and the infrastructure perks are going to build high dollar apartments. And not everyone can afford those apartments. The 100-some apartments that are slated to be built up at next to KU, $2,100 a month for a two-bedroom apartment. So we're hoping that by making these different partnerships, we can both keep young families who have decent credit, and that is an issue with student loans these days, and are below even 60 or 50% of median income, or in some cases below 40, we've done that a couple times lately, they can get their first house. And then when they sell, someone else can step into that house. We're hoping we can further the cause of creating senior housing, because there's gonna be a tremendous need in the next 15 years. And then also supportive housing for folks that are in transition. We've already told Willow that if we can partner on a grant, we will build a fourplex or an eightplex, as long as they guarantee they will have case management on site, so folks can make that transition, smoother transition, if they've been out of the housing market for a while, from shelter living or emergency living to independent living. So they're the three areas I think we really need to do something about. We have started with other interested people in the community, what we call the Lawrence Affordable Housing Coalition. We have also received a grant from the social justice arm of the Catholic Church. It's called the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. And they give money for economic development as long as it's an asset builder. So we have seen not one family that has sold their house hasn't walked away with money in their pocket. So it is an asset builder, and they wanted it to be something that built leadership. Well, according to our charter, One-third of our board, who makes decisions about everything we develop, has to be homeowners or low-income families. Right now, over 40% of our board are low-income representatives. So they're helping influence what we're doing, and we are more and more catering to folks who are lower income than 80%, not because we favor them as much as we see that group is growing exponentially, whether they're seniors, young people, or folks with permanent disabilities. I'd like to stop right now and see if there's any questions. Yes, Mr. Bodo.
I have three questions, each of which the answer would be quick. One, you cited prices for rentals. Does that include utilities?
In some cases, it includes utilities. In others, it doesn't. Any rental that we're building now, though, is ENERGY STAR efficient. So your utilities would be substantially lower. The only thing we can't count on is water bills, which, as you know, have gone up every year for quite a while now.
The second one, you mentioned a four-bedroom house, I think, on Alabama. Does that have two baths?
It does.
The third question is, where is this senior center that you're hoping to build? Where's that going to be?
Well, it's going to be townhome housing or duplex housing, but the only common wall that will be joined is going to be the interior wall of your garages.
Location?
It will be at the 2500 block of Cedarwood, which is right behind the United Way Center. It's a county lot. It's 2.1 acres. And the county had always intended to expand that senior, I think it was Valley View Nursing Home. They intended to expand it. And when they couldn't expand it because they couldn't meet the requirements, they agreed to deed this to us because they always intended it for senior citizens.
Are you going to put in a somewhat of a fitness center in the thing for the
I don't,
people?
You know, we have asked what the seniors wanted. We're not going to put in a fitness center per se, but they will have that walking path and the raised bed garden. So in good weather, they'll be able to get fitness just from daily living. I think that community center is going to be about 800 square feet, so I don't think we'd have room for everything. But we will have room for a little lounge, a little kitchenette area, and then the health kiosk.
Bob, you've done a terrific job of putting us in the context of a really significant justice issue for us here in Lawrence, Kansas. I was wondering, with a good deal of activity going on over the last couple of years under the leadership of Dennis Domer, who has spoken here about the intergenerational communities and so on, what I'm not hearing in your presentation is how some of these developments maybe fit within the model of intergenerational housing communities. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, in fact, Dennis is on our board. And the reason why he's on our board is he spoke with our executive director, Rebecca Buford, about being part of his intergenerational project. And what we're hoping to do is serve the need for not just intergenerational, but make sure that there's housing of various incomes there. So we would bring our housing trust model there so that whether it was for seniors or for young families, housing would be considerably less to get into in that overall project. The other thing we bring to it is the idea that we have seen models where younger families might be in an apartment building and get a break on rent in return for helping seniors in that townhouse complex. And there's some interesting models for that. And so if we were going to do that within Dennis's model and we built townhomes or apartments, we'd like to incorporate that into it as well.
I've read that one of the problems with poverty is that many people do not understand very well how to handle finances. And I wonder if you have any financial counseling.
Thanks for asking that question. I used to work for a group called Housing and Credit Counseling, and I was both a certified housing and urban development housing counselor. And as a housing counselor, you have to work with families to come up with a budget to afford an apartment or afford their home. I was also a certified financial counselor. And when I was with Housing and Credit Counseling, we started a mentoring program called Prosperity Partners, because we realized that families, if it's a generational thing, that have always been used to living in poverty, it's not just one string you're working at. It's not just a household budget. It's a whole variety of issues. So when I was the co-chair of the Prosperity Partners program, we recruited volunteers to work with these families for up to 2 years sometimes to make sure they could get their finances in shape. And because we were working sometimes with very poor families, I thought our success rate was good because it was over 50%. But you can't expect miracles with this. Currently, when I came to Tenants to Homeowners, I instituted a variation of that as a housing readiness and retention program. So again, we try and work with families of limited income to get ready to either rent or buy a house from us or to retain their housing. So for example, if a family that is extremely poor gets behind on rent, but they're able-bodied, they can work on one of our job sites and at a cost of $10 an hour work credit towards their rent. We have someone who rents from us that's an artist, and he was leaving to go to Iowa to help restore some WPA murals. He was going to be gone for 2 months. He asked if there was any way he could work off the rent. Well, he also does video, and we are redoing our website. We wanted a short video for our website, so he agreed to do that in exchange for 2 months' rent. So we try and keep people housed. And to give you an idea of how successful our program has been, the counseling and education and other things, 70% of all our renters have rented from us for more than 5 years. We do quarterly inspections. We try and keep up maintenance because there are affordable apartments in town, but there's not a lot that are cheap and well-maintained. We try and provide both. That's the niche we really need in this town that is missing. And so, yes, we do try and work with the poor, and this Affordable Housing Coalition we put together. We have representatives that are from the shelter, from Willow. They're interested in transitional housing for the poor that are homeless. We have elderly representatives that are interested in what's going to happen to us seniors. We want to see different models. We've been talking about maybe we could build a tiny home village. We really like that model, and we're thinking about doing a target tiny home house just to see how that works out, a sample one. And then also on our coalition are people that are just worried that we don't have a good economic mix of houses for middle income families as well.
I have three questions, too. Okay. To follow up on what Ellen was saying, a lot of the really poor don't seem to have a clue about how to repair things. Along with your tool rental, do you have anyone who helps teach how to fix things rather than just pitch them?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why when we get into home ownership, before people can even go for their bank loan, they go for a pre-income qualification visit. Our partner agency just happens to be an agency I used to work for, Housing and Credit Counseling. They do a one-hour budget session with them to make sure that they develop a homeowner budget. When you're a renter, you don't have to save for other things sometimes, like repairs. So Housing and Credit Counseling, for free, does a one-hour visit with them. That's required. Then they have to go to a four-hour class that I teach. And part of that class talks about home maintenance and also about why it's important for them to be invested in every aspect of home buying so that they don't buy a lemon. They don't buy somebody's misery that they're going to get stuck with. And we give them a packet of information on home repairs about this thick. And then once a year, we usually have a home maintenance class and a potluck. So last year, it was in December, we did a chili potluck and a home maintenance class. 19 families showed up with their children, and our rehab maintenance specialists did things like repairing pipes and faucets, and he also brought a piece of sheetrock to show he could repair a hole in the wall. And then also when people have questions now, they get to the point where they call us, and even if we can't repair it, we'll come out and take a look at it and let them know the cheapest way they could do it on their own or hire someone else to do it. So we're trying. We're really trying. And those home maintenance classes, they're available to anyone. We'll even do it for renters. We have renter readiness classes that we've taught to Willow case managers so they can help their families as they get ready for renting.
The second one, the Studio 804 architecture classes, are they part of the low-income one that they've built? Are they part of you, or is they separate?
At one point, Studio 804 was building homes for us. When we got to the point where we were emphasizing energy efficiency, we found that the home that they could not build homes that were as energy efficient as what we could build. So we haven't been building with them lately because we think the energy efficiency is really important for families, because the total cost of affordability, as your husband had pointed out with apartments, isn't just your monthly house payment, but it's your utilities as well.
And the third is, how does one get a hold of you?
We are on. I'm glad you asked that. It's almost like you set me up here. We have handouts in the back. We have a general handout just on who we are. And this one, by the way, was paid for by a volunteer grant, as long as you put volunteer opportunities on the back. So on the back, it gives you a little bit about us. We have a website. If you type in Tenants to Homeowners Lawrence, it will come up. It is a great website for the 1990s. Come back in a month and we'll have a new one. But it does give you all the information you need. We have brochures for home ownership. It has our email addresses, website, phone number, etc. And we have one for our rental programs. We have two rental programs, one for folks with accessibility needs, and just what we call our general rental programs. All that information is online as well. And if you're interested in the senior project, I don't know if I brought enough of these when I look out and see the demographic here, but here are some pictures of our intended senior development, and I could show you a couple up here as well, but I'm probably running out of time. I think I maybe have overstayed my welcome here. Any other questions?
Oh, just really quickly, do you have volunteer opportunities for whole families with small children?
You know, that's something I don't think we've ever explored, but we probably could, because every once in a while we'll do something like a gardening day where maybe you would weed and garden for the folks at our handicapped properties. Or sometimes we'll just have a general maintenance day where people paint fences, and if you wanted your children to help with gardening or something, we might be able to arrange that. That would probably be in the spring. But if you're interested, feel free to stay in touch with me. I also have business cards that I brought that I could distribute as well.
We are running out of time. Thanks so much for talking to us, Robert.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Robert Baker. This program was recorded at the Unitarian Fellowship of Lawrence, Kansas on November 16, 2014. If you'd like to hear this program again, check podcasts for All Souls Forums at kkfi.org.